You're listening to the Franchise Podcast Network, presented by Lucky Star Casino. KRXO FM and KRXO HD Oklahoma City, a product of Tyler Media, reaching over 1 million Oklahomans every week. Now, the Outdoor Hour, giving you the inside scoop on the great outdoors on 107.7 The Franchise.
As long as I can remember, I've been drawn to the outdoors. There's something primal in each of us that awakens when we step outside the bounds of modern society and back into the vast possibilities of the natural world. The more civilized our lives become, the louder our hearts cry for reconnection with our native ways. Failure is imminent, dangers drawing nigh, but approached with reverence and tact, the outdoors return wisdom and gain. In both the outdoors and in life, harvests are fleeting, but lessons and memories abound. With that in mind, we step forth boldly together in pursuit of ourselves outdoors. We are nothing more than tree stand troubadours. Welcome inside the Outdoor Hour. I know this is going to come as a shock to you.
Probably
but we
not.
We are in rare form this week already.
Probably
the heat's
not.
Getting everybody.
The heat is getting every. It's going to cool down, though.
So they say. I'm a couple of, you know, been up since five. I'm a few cups deep on some tea already.
You know, it's serious when he stands up halfway through the episode.
Yeah, if there wasn't someone here, I would already, but I don't have that ability, so I'm not sure what I'm going to do.
That's the mic he will use, and he'll stand up.
Don't let me take that away from you.
It's okay. It's
we'll
all right.
We'll play musical chairs here.
Yeah.
We got a guest in the studio this week.
We do.
I'm very excited. As you know, spend a lot of time thinking about how we're going to introduce our guests and a roadmap for the show just in general.
Is that a tongue-in-cheek or are you being serious?
No,
right
it's
now?
Absolutely tongue-in-cheek.
Okay, good.
We've had some very impressive world-renowned chefs and artists and people on the show, and Josh is like, you want to go ahead and do your intro? And I'm like, what's his last name again?
That's not true. The important people you've taken time for.
Yeah.
You've had things written down on your phone, like a
little
script.
We've had episodes. So let's
get back
I
to introducing our guest.
I need a haiku immediately.
You need a haiku. Is that 575? Is that how this goes?
Sure.
Kyle likes to fish nights from a drift boat under the stars.
Too many syllables.
I can't forget it. I tried really hard there.
I'm actually impressed. I didn't think you were going to do it. So kudos to you, sir.
The fact you knew it was 575 is
I know.
Better than
it kinda, better than, you got me on that one, sir.
I'm a well-rounded human being.
Gentleman and a scholar.
Careful on both of those. I want to back up that you said the important people we bring notes for. We're about to introduce a guest, and there are clearly no notes in front of me.
Thank you.
Which lets you know where you land in his hierarchy.
Why don't we roll through some introductions, and that'll give me about 30 seconds to figure out how to introduce our guest. This is the Outdoor Hour. I'm Taylor Maples. I just shot a bear.
Oh, my God. We've got this going. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hold on, big guy. Okay.
What's
it
my walk-up song?
Hold on.
I need
hold
a walk-up
on.
Song.
Hold on for the ride.
That's Joshua Wildman Stratton.
Wildman Stratton.
What's my walk-up music going to be?
Yeah, well.
You know me.
You got to be a regular, you know?
Behind the glass on the ones and twos, Matty Goldfish.
Always baked and extra cheesy.
I love that.
You know, we've never had a guest ask for walk-up music,
but now
and I am so embarrassed to report we have nothing for you.
I didn't know we were like producing like this high class.
We
show.
Told you this is like allegedly could be award-winning radio.
Perhaps send a pre-interview questionnaire and make that a question.
That seems like producer work, right?
Goldfish.
Yeah, there's a lot of heavy lifting that goes on back here to be the award-winning show. And I'm sorry, but I'll get a generic walk-up intro for our guest.
No, we're just going to need a pre-episode, questionnaire, and then they can select it,
That's
okay.
Really
and then
good.
Also preferred also a nickname?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the meantime, by Space Hog would be it. I mean,
okay.
If
okay.
you needed it.
So here's okay. what we're going to do. I'm going to introduce you, and we're just going to act as if it's playing, and then in post, Goldfish can go in and lay it in.
Don't do it.
What's the song?
In the Meantime, the Space Hog.
Okay, he said it. It's recorded. I'll find it.
Oh, okay, we'll find it. Our guest this week is a good friend of mine. Do you have a nickname?
Please no.
Please.
I do not.
Please no is your nickname?
Please no.
Now on the Outdoor Hour.
Your nickname
please no.
Oh my gosh. My safe word.
That's what they called you. My didn't safe know. Word's watermelon.
Dad jokes for days. I love this show already.
Oh, man.
No nickname.
This is Kyle Musny.
Self-class. I love this.
How was that for an introduction?
It's
it was
perfect.
Direct.
Perfect.
Straight to the point.
Perfect. I've got stories. That's about all I got.
I got something to add real quick on Josh's intro here.
Yeah.
Joshua Stratton has spent the majority of his adult and professional life pursuing his passion for hunting and fishing, a journey that has now spanned over 22 years. He has gone from guide to storyteller and from agency owner to his current position as a senior director of marketing and communications for the Mule Deer Foundation and our lovely co-host, Joshua Wildman Stratton.
Thanks.
How is the Mule Deer Foundation? Going pretty well?
Yeah, it's great.
You put a magazine with your bio in it in front of me, and I'm not going to read it on the air.
And I get when you're the senior editor of said magazine, you put your bio in
yes,
the magazine.
First, you put yours very
I
first.
I actually do not do the design and layout, to be clear.
That's, I'm surprised that's your picture's not too. On the cover.
On the cover of the Rolling Stone?
It's a good song.
I recently did a binge back-to-back of Almost Famous and Dazed and Confused just to have a...
That is a good...
It was a good couple hours.
Yeah, that's
it was a good couple hours.
A good movie combo.
I'm yeah. also going to let the listeners know that Josh did not enjoy hearing his bio read in studio.
Well,
he
whenever
had a grin.
whenever you have a sultry professional voice do it, I mean,
yeah. It's like, oh, stop.
It makes it. You stop.
Oh, you stop.
You stop. Did any, speaking of funny things, and I know we have to get to an episode here, but and the Mule Deer Foundation, did any of you by chance, and if you didn't, you're going to say yes anyways, see the little reel
yes.
that we put out? Thank you. That involved the Bigfoot and myself?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. I was accosted by Bigfoot.
Hey, tell the listeners what you're at. Are we talking about Instagram?
We'll get there.
Okay.
They got to stick around for the whole thing to get that sweet info, okay? We can't just be letting that out of the bag.
Which means nobody's ever found us on social media.
Facts.
If you've made it this far... I apologize. Really excited to have Kyle here.
I wasn't done with my story.
I was.
I know.
Go ahead.
But anyways, in it, I mentioned being Bigfoot safe. And so just something to check out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that on your social? Is that
no,
on the MDF stuff?
MDF.
Okay. What is that handle?
You're so rude. Mule_deer_foundation.
There's a lot of Mule Deer Foundation accounts out there.
Yeah, because we have 150 chapters.
And it seems like each of them has their own.
They do.
When I try to tag MDF and stuff, it's really
hard.
Difficult.
Yes, I agree with you. Thank you for...
If only we knew somebody in marketing and communications with the Mule Deer Foundation that could streamline some of this.
Or even perhaps an outside organization to help.
Did you know that this is a marketing intervention today for MDF?
That's good. I do all my work for free anyhow.
We should talk a little bit about something that's not going to make Josh want to hit me in the parking lot with his truck after we're done with this. Kyle, I'm glad you're here, man.
Me too. This is fun.
We've talked about doing this for a while.
We've basically done it in the car on the way to several fishing trips.
Excursions. We've done it in boats.
We've done it in cars. Planes.
Trains.
What are we talking about? podcast. We always have great conversations.
Podcast.
Fishing, hunting, life, family,
yeah,
work.
Yeah. It's one of the things that Josh and I have connected on a lot over the last couple of years is the outdoors in his world is a professional endeavor. I am very much a weekend warrior outdoorsman. But all three of us have young children, and I think all three of us are trying to spend as much time outdoors as we can and use the outdoors as a vehicle to learn valuable life lessons and pass some of those things on to our kids. Kyle, just kind of a baseline here. Did you grow up in the outdoors, or is this something you came to a little later on in life?
Grew up fishing, not outdoors. Okay. I have only shot birds. I've never hunted for anything other than, mm-hmm, you know, turkeys or mm-hmm, whatever. Grew up on a spin rod and bait cast as a kid. Didn't have a lot of girlfriends, but I did fish in bass tournaments, believe it or not. Growing up, had a great time. Wasn't until, I don't know, probably 7 or 8 years ago. I was up in northern Arkansas on the White River. Father-in-law handed me a fly rod. He had no idea what he was doing. Thus, I didn't. But casted that thing from a boat, drifted down with a little worm on it, and, you know, it was a stocked rainbow. But feeling that difference, I haven't been back to a regular fishing pole since, and it's been a full-on obsession. So outdoors in general, fly fishing is it. I hike incessantly, specifically in Colorado. So spend a lot of time outdoors. Not the hunting space at all, though.
You've climbed some 14ers recently, too, right?
Thank you for asking. I do have a goal to do all 58 by the time I'm 58, although four of them are on private land. So we'll see if we can get to them one day. But yeah, I've been doing a lot.
You know what I love about Kyle is people say this about a lot of people. Oh, that guy's never met a stranger. I have never honestly been anywhere with Kyle that by the end of a 20-minute period, like, people aren't buying him drinks in restaurants. And, like, you want to talk about somebody that could just turn the country around, honestly. Like, Kyle's ability to unite people.
Is he announcing his presidency?
Right here on the Outdoor Hour.
Fight! Too much.
Never too much.
Yeah. No. Kyle's a people person.
Too much is shooting at someone. That's too much.
Oh, my mic was off. Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Standing we could turn up this back around to fishing.
I think maybe we should.
We are in the KOCO studios.
Real quickly, yeah. But fishing really has become an obsession for you, and I know we're coming up here close against the end of this segment. We'll dive into that a little bit more in the upcoming rest of the show, but there are very few people in my life that I would consider a fly fishing junkie on a scale higher than you right now.
My wife would agree. My kids would agree. And we can get to it later, or we don't have to if it's boring, but the community of fly fishing is one that is like a drug. Josh knows this, working at the fly shop too, but you get hooked into a fish, it's a feeling, then you get into it and meet the community, and it's over. That sounds a little strange, you know, without further explanation, maybe it is, but the community keeps you going for sure. So I'm all in on it.
I love it. I want to talk a little bit about the White, because that's something you and I share in common. Kyle's actually the person who introduced me to the White River for the very first time and started a regional obsession of mine.
A good old pusher man.
Yeah. I think I've made 9 trips since September a year ago.
I love that.
Most of those with you. You also just took a trip to the Great White North, eh?
I did. North Saskatchewan, Reindeer Lake.
That's pretty rad. I want to hear about that, too.
It is rad.
Okay.
you do want to hear about it.
Let's squeeze in a break here. Look at us setting up things like we know what we're doing. When we come back, I want to hear about Rainbow Lake. We'll talk about the white. I want to know more about what's going on with MDF. You gave me a new publication here and some stickers. I think we've got a lot to talk about.
Always.
We'll do it on the other side. This is the Outdoor Hour
in
on 107.7
Space Hog.
The franchise.
You're listening to The Outdoor Hour with your host Taylor Maples and Josh Stratton on 107.7 The Franchise.
Welcome back inside The Outdoor Hour. We covered a lot during that commercial break in the studio here. And I think the consensus is, gents, we need to get on a trip to Idaho together.
Yeah.
Yeah, this all started, Josh wearing a McCall Angler's hat.
That's
what
cool,
McCall is.
It's a cool hat, right?
Yeah, it's a dope hat. Thank you, Ed Anderson, the fabulous artist, curator of the Ediverse, all things Americanism in hunting and fishing. But yeah, McCall Angler's a fly shop he owns. And the crazy story is, and I just found this out this year, is that a really good friend... the guy who used to own the shop, I didn't know that that was his shop. Like, I didn't, but he's a friend of Bear Holman's, and I knew him for years and knew him as this elk guide and fly fishing guide who lived out in Idaho. But he was like living in the Keys for a while and living at Bear, with Bear and Travis. And, knew him from there. And then Ed was telling me when I was up there recently, he was like, yeah, I bought this shop from that guy. And I had no, this awesome cat named Robert Monroe. Hmm. And I had no idea, but such a small world. But yeah.
Goes back to that community, man. Everybody knows everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We used to say growing up that like sports and travel sports and the higher up you get in athletics, the smaller the world gets. Fly fishing is a very small world.
Well, it's also a very small industry. So
yeah.
I mean,
for sure.
You know, in the big scale of things, it's, you know, pretty small.
Kyle, have you been to Idaho before?
I have been to Idaho. This was pre-fly fishing days.
Okay.
Everywhere I went, now in retrospect, I wish I was. But I've been up to Boise, took a train up to, and now for Coeur d'Alene, I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
Close Not enough. A Frenchman, but just America. Gorgeous country up there. I like, sign me up for Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, any time, I'm there.
Where's that place in Nevada we want to go
fishing? Lake?
Pyramid Lake. Yeah. Is that on your list?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Let's go get weird.
Lake
fishing is it's different.
On the ladder, though?
Yeah.
You've seen this? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know a fair good number of the guides over there.
Okay.
All right, let's do it.
I think
we can have a fly. If only you knew a pilot.
Usually our staff, some of our staff usually book a Pyramid Lake trip after our expo or before our expo because it's just right there.
That makes really good sense.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, we do know a pilot, by the way. This
nice.
Guy right here.
Do you own your own airplane?
I have access to an airplane. I do
okay,
not own
good.
It.
Good. Mm. That counts. That's better.
It was 100% just like a boat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's better.
I know the feeling.
Yeah.
I want to know more about your trip to Canada.
Unbelievable. Oh, unbelievable.
Canada.
So this all started at a got pretty lubed up at a fundraiser, and everybody in the room knew not to bid on this live auction item. It was donated by this guy. His name's Trey Ars, A-A-R-S. Trey is from Wyoming, owns a bear hunting and deer hunting outfit. He donates this trip to Canada. It's called Trout Camp. I have no idea what this is, but I'm like, yeah, it sounds amazing. I bet it's right on the other side of the border. We get after it, win this trip. It wasn't until hours later I realized this is not on the border. This is at Reindeer Lake. Reindeer Lake, I believe, is the sixth largest lake in the Western Hemisphere.
Not Rainbow Lake.
Not Rainbow Lake.
Did I call it Rainbow
I'm
Lake?
I'm pretty sure you did. I'm pretty sure you did.
I think that's where they did one of the seasons of Lost, though, wasn't
they,
it?
They absolutely did.
It was or not, like, I mean, not Lost, Alone.
Like, Alone.
My bad, sorry.
Yeah.
The one where they, and let me tell you.
Who won
wild.
That episode? I mean, that season, I wonder.
It, was that your friend?
I can't remember if that's
I
the one
can't
Clay
remember.
Won or not.
It's been too long. I've binge-watched them all.
I feel
so.
Like this is
a Google.
That scene in Happy Gilmore when Shooter McGavin's like, well, I feel like the real winner here is the city of Portland. Must be something. In the That's Reindeer Lake.
Yeah.
So to get up there, it's a flight into Minneapolis because there's a couple flights there that takes you to Saskatoon, which is a south central Saskatchewan province. Then it's a 6-hour drive up to the lake. Then a boat ride or a float plane ride.
Which did you guys do?
Because of the cost of the float plane, we ended up doing.
You swam. I got it.
We swam. Yep. No, actually, we rented a car. It was very reasonable. They came and picked us up. The trout camp did. It was a little 25-minute ride up to the lodge and had just. It's not going to be a once-in-a-lifetime trip because I will be back, absolutely. But the most pristine water, pristine trees, and this lake is it's absolutely massive, about 200 miles long. You know, so there's some points where you felt like you're on the ocean. You could barely see land. Ironic, it's called Trout Camp. I did catch one trout while I was there, but it's a pike fishing establishment. When Trey and his crew found out that me and my buddy wanted to fly fish, this was in April that we won the trip, he said, well, you got 1 month. It's June. June is the only month that you can get up here and fly fish. So naturally, I took the 1 week he had without asking any approval from my boss or my buddy that was going with me. And we get up there and... yeah, I mean, I'll answer any questions you want to know. I don't want to be too boring, but the experience was incredible. 40-inch pike that are just these dinosaur fish that will attack a big streamer like a shark. I mean, it was an unbelievable experience. How many did I catch? Couldn't tell you. Like, countless, literally countless.
Were you staying in a lodge? Were you camping? I know you guys cooked out a few times. I'm just trying to piece together some of what you told me.
Great, yeah. So we take a boat in. So the trout camp is kind of the south central part of the lake. Trey bought this place and has really fixed it up. He and his fiance and son. There's about 8 cabins there that are remote cabins. I mean, you are in the middle of nowhere. Fix it up, but water comes right out of the lake. They filter it, you know, just a little for Canadian standards. So water's fresh, water's hot, beds are comfortable. They cook breakfast and dinner every night. There's like a main lodge where the patrons all gather and commune and talk about the day. But lunch every day, you go out in the morning. First thing you do is you go and catch 3 pike that are eatable. Okay, some are too small, some are too big, and that's what you have for lunch. So all the fishing guys there are locals. It's a Native American tribe up there called Cree, C-R-E-E, I believe. Nicest people. They take you out. Some of them speak very good English. Some of them is kind of broken, but they teach you how to cut up these pike. You've got corn and beans that you make on a campfire on one of these islands, and it's just you, and if you don't catch, you don't eat lunch. But you're gonna, I was kind of worried at first, but you know, 6 minutes in and you're pulling them in left and right.
We've got some pictures posted up on the Outdoor Hour Instagram page, so if you want to go see some of what Kyle is talking about, from Trout Camp up at Reindeer Lake.
That's right.
Okay.
Trout Camp at Reindeer Lake. And there are, now I'm not plugging in the other ones. I'm not even going to say their names. There are other places. But after meeting Trey and his family and then seeing the digs. So I went as far, you know, I own my own business. I have 3 young kids and a wife. I couldn't be completely disconnected. Like, I got to know what's going on. So I went as far as bought Starlink. I was ready to take it up there. Bought a Garmin satellite communicator just in case. I did use that on the lake, but at the actual camp, he has Starlink already. So I was able to check in, you know, via phone, FaceTime, emails, text. So it was, we were available if we needed to be. But yes, Trout Camp at Reindeer Lake, their website is troutcamp.com. They also have an Instagram and Facebook. I would recommend them, and I will be back at some point after I knock out a few other bucket list trips. But if I haven't sent them to you, I will send some pictures of fish and the digs that we stayed in, the food that we ate. I mean, it was a 5-star experience, certainly.
Had you caught pike before?
First time. I've always wanted to. I've caught muskie before, which are, you know, pikes of the river and much smaller. So, there's Taylor showing me a picture of the one trout that I caught, which happened to be the biggest trout I've ever caught. But it was underwhelming compared to everything else. But no, once we found out about Reindeer Lake, I mean, it was full on research. I went up to talk to Josh's buddies at the fly shop, got hooked up with a Canadian company on some streamers, what type of line we're using, what kind of rods to take. Trey and the guys were, and even the fly fishing guys that took us out were, I shouldn't say fly fishing guides, they were excited that we were fly fishing, because not many people do. It's mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that spin and bait cast up there, and they yank him out a lot easier. They really do. It was easy fishing on the fly rod, fun fishing on the fly rod. But then you see some story or hear some stories from the people staying at the camp, like, man, you jerks. Like, it's like that scene in Goodwill Hunting when he's like, do you see how easy this is? It's how those guys are doing it, right? But they had, even normal fishermen who aren't insane, they have a great time up there too. But those pike, so you go in these bays. You're not in the middle of the lake. I mean, you're in bays, sometimes 2-3 feet of water, and you're ripping streamers that are 7 or 8 inches long through this water. It's almost like sight casting for tarpon, which I know you're familiar with. It's more like redfish or carp here in Oklahoma. They don't really tell, but you can't. The water's so clear, you can see them. They're hiding. You cast it out and strip it, strip, 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 and they attack it. They come out of nowhere, and you don't have to set the hook. Like, they set the hook for them, for themselves. And just an incredible fight. Like, my shoulders were sore. My forearms were sore. And then you get these gorgeous fish that have these dinosaur teeth that taste pretty, pretty nice.
I saw they were kind of like lakeside fire pit prepared. Do you know what they were actually doing to cook these? What they were seasoned with or anything like that?
Absolutely. In fact, day one, they taught us. Day two and three, we did it. So my buddy Matt and that went up there with us, we actually did it. So everything was fried. Pike is a real light, flaky fish. If you can't cook it properly, you know, with grills or smokers or whatever, you do it like this. So we get timber from one of the islands. You start a fire. They have tin pans. They have this little box full of all the things we needed. Tin pan, filled it up with vegetable oil. The fish, once we filleted it up and cleaned it just there in the lake water, tossed it in flour and some basic seasoning, salt, pepper, garlic powder. Toss it around. While that's going, we chopped up potatoes and onions, just real basic, salt and pepper. Fried those up, put them aside, let them stay hot by the campfire. Then we, at the same time, we're just heating corn and beans like in the tin cans. They're close to the fire. The fish went in after being tossed in the flour mixture, and just there in that same vegetable oil, couple minutes per side, and just beautiful, clean, not super fishy, tasty thing. And it was great. By the fourth day, I could take a pike break, but unbelievable.
I was thinking about that for the guides. Are they eating with you, or do they have, like, their sandwich on the side?
As long as you catch enough fish, they eat with you, and they do get sick of it as well, because at least during fishing season, which is a few months out of the year, that's what they're having for lunch every day.
I've not done a ton of guided fishing all around the world. I know you guys combined in this room. We've done a bit, though. Generally speaking, guides are so interested in, like, the preservation of not only the species of fish and that fishery, but, like, that individual fish, right? Because they know that they're making their living on this resource. It blows my mind, just because I've not experienced it, to go and fish somewhere that has such abundance that they're just ripping them out and cooking them for their clients every day, because in theory, like, that's three or four fewer fish for them to go chase with the next group of clients, right? Doesn't seem like that's an issue. There just must be many of them up there.
You mentioned, though, that there was too big or too small. There's a slot.
Absolutely. For eating, certainly.
Yeah.
Google Maps, you can go look at this lake and see that it's big. I'll show you some pictures. Maybe we can post them to your Instagram, but massive. So everywhere you go, you've got a great opportunity. And there are other fish as well. For example, the lake trout that I caught, we could have eaten that. I mean, it was massive. You talk about the White River.
Mm-hmm.
I've never caught a rainbow trout on the White River that was even close to this size. The locals don't like to eat them because they're too oily. Usually trout is pretty clean, easy to cook. They absolutely wouldn't touch it. They're like, oh, yeah, unless you steam this in foil or whatever for a long time, it's going to be disgusting.
Hmm.
I would have tried it. I'll try anything once.
Sure.
But threw it back. Got a great picture, of course, like a true fly fisherman would. But there are other fish in the lake, certainly. But pike are ample. Like, we weren't gonna, nobody's going hungry up there.
It's crazy.
They will one day.
Wow.
Our local conservationist over here. No, but, and you have to hope and you have to think that when that time comes, people will make the right decisions to help protect the resource.
Yeah, I mean, they thought that about redfish forever.
Yeah,
they were wrong, right? That's why there's so many places you can't keep reds anymore, because the resource will run out. I mean, there are threats to their habitat and to that can make catastrophic changes. And that doesn't mean that it has to be something that stays forever, right? You know, you look in Louisiana, you know, with the bycatch rate of the pogey fishermen on reds, like, hopefully we have reds to fish for in Louisiana in years to come. We may not at the rate that they're being removed from the fishery, and decimated by pogey fishermen, like, that's a real threat. You know, in Florida many, many years ago, you can't keep reds anymore. And so, you know, as long as they're staying on top of it and managing, I trust biologists, I trust, you know, fish and game departments that are doing those research and studying those fisheries to make the right decision that needs to be made for the long-term sustainability of the resource. But yeah, I mean, if you're commercializing the targeting of those fish, and every single day during fishing season, every single fishing operation on that lake is feeding their clients that fish, a day will come where that cannot happen anymore.
I will say they do a great job of regulating number of people out on the lake.
Oh, yeah,
number
yeah.
of business. This place, it is massive. Even still, I completely hear what you're saying. The only place in the States I have been anywhere close to Reindeer Lake in terms of number of people on the lake, number of people that can get a license to fish for that species, was down at the Devil's River near Del Rio, Texas. I mean, that was a really difficult...
Or Pyramid. Pyramid Lake is the same way.
Which I haven't been to, but I know
regulated.
It's
tough. Super, super regulated.
And I'm glad they're doing it because it's just this gorgeous fishery. Same with the Devil's River where I have been. That's the closest place. The White River, for example, is so overfished, but that's it's a stocked.
There's no fish in the White River.
You wouldn't know. That's certainly true. But yeah, there are places in the States that do a terrible job, like Josh was saying with the redfish and things like that. But up there, it certainly won't be in our lifetime that I think they're going to be hurting.
So, Josh, do we as consumers of that kind of an adventure have a responsibility in this, or is that, you know, especially being international, right? We don't have a vote the same way in Canada that we would, and therefore we may or may not have a voice. Do we have a responsibility to play a role in that kind of an experience in that kind of a nation?
Every hunter and angler has personal responsibility in everything they're doing. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. If you have a personal belief that you don't want to harvest those animals, you need to be straight with your guide and say, I'm not interested in doing it. Just because it's their normal behavior doesn't mean it has to be part of your experience, one. And two, like, the other question that people should think about sometimes, though, too, is like, hey, is there an invasive species in here that maybe we could spend some time targeting that's fun to catch that shouldn't be here that we can yank out of here? You know, that's a major threat to most of our fisheries in this country, is invasive species that have taken over and are impacting the resource for the native populations in those waterways. And so, you know, I think there we always have a personal responsibility. We need to be true to that. Just because it's their culture doesn't mean it has to be your culture. Now, in this situation, man, I'd be eating them too. Like, I mean, I'm not saying that is something you shouldn't do. I'd try them, and no doubt, like, yeah, let's rock and roll.
I was starting to feel like you were disappointed.
No, not at all. No. It's just interesting because it's different than a lot of what I've experienced. But I also think that, you know, you could make a short jump to deer hunting and bear hunting and a lot of these other harvesting outdoors endeavors that we enjoy, where, you know, the resource as an individual is not renewable in that same way, right? But I think that your experience harvesting those fish and having that experience of cooking them and eating them accelerated your interest in that region and in that species, and it has made you an advocate for that in a way that you probably wouldn't have been if you didn't have that holistic, total experience, you know?
Completely agree. I will say, I've never really done something like that. Since I'm not a hunter, I've never went out and purposely did a hunting and fishing to eat or for whatever.
Mm-hmm.
This one, learning how the locals have done it for hundreds of years.
I think it's a super cool experience added onto the trip.
Right. I'm looking literally 22 to 26 inches. That's what we were looking for.
Yeah.
And then seeing the number of fish that we caught after that, seeing the abundance, makes you not feel terrible.
We're not being critical of it.
I know.
It's just an interesting.
Listen, I think most people should keep. I had an old boss at another conservation organization, and he used to poke fun at the hook and torture method. That's what he called the torture and release method. Which is what he called catch and release anglers, because I do think there's an aspect of the reality of what we're doing that gets removed when you never think about the fact that this is a resource that, one, could sustain me and feed my family, and two, the act of actually participating in dispatching of an animal, there's part of the experience that you are disconnected from. And I think that there's a really big and important value proposition that you cross the bridge with when you actually dispatch an animal. And so without that, I'm not thoroughly convinced that you are as bought in on what it takes to conserve that resource as someone who is also depending on it in to sustain their life. And so I don't have a hierarchy of like, oh, if you're catch and release, you're better than someone who keeps. Dude, I participated in the culling of a bass pond 2 years ago, and that needed to happen. We knew what sizes we were looking for. The bass pond was not healthy, and we did a largemouth bass fresh fry. Never done it in my life. It was first off delicious, and two, it was also vital to sustaining the well-being of that ecosystem inside of that pond. And like, it was weird because I had never participated in it, but I didn't feel bad about it. And they were delicious, and we fed a bunch of people. Like,
but to your point, especially here in Oklahoma, not fly fishing, largemouth bass, I mean, every time you see someone with dry hands, for example, pick up a bass, stick it in their mouth, hold it up, touch their gills with dry hands. Every time people love fishing when largemouth bass are spawning because you know where they're going to be. It's like you're yanking them out when they're trying to spawn. Like, that's what people don't get. So that's a really interesting take that I haven't ever talked to somebody about before.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's all, dude, we all have to experience this under our own, you know, moral code and what drives us ethically and all of that. And, I think we all approach the conversation from different places. If at the core we can, like, one of the things at Mule Deer Foundation that we're really trying to move the needle towards is that we're no longer having a debate of if conservation should be happening, but we start having debates on how it happens. And I think in general, if we can find ourselves in that place, like, so many people have lost the opportunity to own their piece of ground that they're emotionally connected to manage a group of wild animals under their guidance, under the resource for their family, that there's some detachment there, right? Like, we're all getting out trying to pursue something, and obviously I'm speaking in hunting terms right now, but like, the industry tells us that big bucks is what makes you a cool hunter, right? When you talk to someone who tends a piece of ground for a long period of time, they look forward to the opportunity to take a nice specimen. But that is not why they wake up every day and make those sacrifices. And when I talk to landowners, particularly multi-generational landowners who have managed their property with a conservation mindset, they want to see quantity and they want to see quality. But they care about everything else that plays into that too. That certain type of grass that they've been trying to bring back, or man, I'm starting to see a lot less cedars now that we've been proactive about it, or whatever it may be. But they look at the picture holistically, and I think you get some of that with lease owners who are managing properties. But often I feel like they're bent more to like, hey, let's find some, we're going to grow big deer here, you know. And that doesn't always have to be the conversation, and I would argue it shouldn't be the conversation. What should be the conversation is that we all get an opportunity to play a role in preserving the landscape and the habitat and a way of life that we collectively believe in and as outdoorsmen. And yes, that looks different to a lot of different people, but at the core of it, if we can all get a baseline understanding of what it takes to have either if big deer or what you care about, well, really getting to big deer is also what gets you to herd diversity and gets you to more deer on the landscape and so, you know, if we can all just absorb more information, have a better baseline understanding, whether you're obsessed with fishing or you're obsessed with hunting, and come to this conversation in a different lane, like, dude, yeah, you'll be able to go to that lake for 100 years from now and participate in the same way that you participated this year. And, you know, you'll be able to go down to Venice, Louisiana, and when bull reds are in and catch monsters, and you'll be able to, you know, chase tarpon and find permit and, you know, whatever it may be, whatever the species is. But if we're not actively engaged in that conversation and not just being a tourist experiencing it, man, we're definitely not going to get anywhere down this road.
Little knowledge bomb there.
This is great.
I love it. Hey, we got to get a break. This is the Outdoor Hour on 107.7 The Franchise.
Now, back to the Outdoor Hour with your hosts, Taylor Maples and Josh Stratton on 107.7 The Franchise.
Welcome back into the Outdoor Hour. This was a fun one this week, guys. Kyle, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
It's a blast.
Josh.
Hey.
You were here.
I was here.
Let's do this again sometime. I know you want to shout out your Trout Camp one more time. Their website was troutcamp.com.
Yeah, simple as that.
Okay.
Trey R's name, A-A-R-S.
Really
He's
cool.
He's a good dude.
We got to have you back on sometime so we can talk more White River stuff. You know what we need to do? We need to get Dustin Doss on for an episode. He's been hitting me up saying, dude, you keep talking about this radio show, but I've never been invited. We'll get him on. We'll get you in for that episode as well.
It'd be a good time.
That'd be a good time. I am Taylor Maples. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, all the interwebs at T_Maples. Joshua Wildman Stratton can be found on Instagram at @against_current. You can always follow the Outdoor Hour on social media at @outdoor_hour if you're interested in seeing some of the pictures that Kyle has brought in this week, or any of our other content. You can do it there as well. Final thoughts, anybody?
Go boldly. Try to eat some pike if you can ever find it with moderation.
With moderation. Yeah, don't get Josh in your grill on that.
Do right by what your soul says.
There you go.
And back that bass up.
Back that bass up, boy.
Thanks for the stickers.
You're welcome.
This has been the Outdoor Hour on 107.7 The Franchise. Until next time, go boldly. We'll see you outdoors.
Love you.
Bye.